You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Next up on the phone with us, he was going to be in studio, but he takes this retirement thing pretty seriously, and he just kept sleeping. So we have him on the phone, and that's, believe me, a true honor. I've been terming it as, one of the most legendary, explaining John Jones, one of the best remembered legendary police officers in the long history of great heroes that have served us with the Austin Police Department. He was the lead investigator for the majority of the time, I would say, for the yogurt shop murders, which was back in the national spotlight with this landmark documentary series that just finished airing a week ago on HBO. Was it HBO?
HBO.
Yeah, HBO. John Jones, and also with us, of course, Dennis Ferris, retired president, but the president of the retired Austin Police Officers Association. Are you a member of that organization, by the way, John?
Oh, absolutely. And not just because Dennis happens to be the president.
Well, it's because it was the right thing to do.
John, I got to tell you, man, that's been a wonderful organization for you guys ever since it got started. But I am so impressed that under Dennis, at a time this department needs assistance. It's not just the old guys that get together and have a beer. I mean, you guys, thank goodness you're there with the lack of officers and experience to be there doing so much, which is really, you can't underestimate the recovery that this department tried to rebuild that you guys are contributing there. And I give my old friend Dennis, who I used to hate, but I give him total credit, and I don't hate him anymore.
Yeah, he's quite the leader. I'd like to say he started that when he was working for me. But
he worked for you?
Oh, yeah.
He did.
Yeah, John was my street sergeant for about a year after he promoted from sergeant investigator to senior sergeant. He came out on the street and was my sergeant for about a year. We had some fun. We did. John's got a couple of stories that don't believe me when he tells you.
Let me tell you, this guy, you're about to hear John Jones, ladies and gentlemen. I've been lucky enough, privileged, blessed to know him, seriously, and work with him on committees for different things in the community and all for decades. I don't know that I've ever heard of anybody that didn't just think he had the most attractive personality. You want to be around him. John, you got something special. And I'm glad that you agreed to participate in that landmark documentary. And as we know, that couldn't have been easy.
No, it wasn't, but it was necessary. And that's about what being a cop is all about, doing what's necessary.
You know, Dennis shared with us that, especially with all the attention to this documentary, people around the country are finding you, and they want to get an interview, or and you're telling everybody no, but you've agreed to talk here. Why, if that's right, why is that?
Well, actually, you may not remember this, but I came on your show a long time ago, back when in the days when Sammy was still with you.
Yeah, yeah, that does ring a bell.
So, and I've always been impressed with you, and actually you were, I think, Ooh. President of the 100 Club way back when, or
yeah,
had
yeah.
something to do with the 100 Club.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, of course, being with Mr. Roy Butler for so many years and all. And,
yeah.
I happened to know about that early. Well, thank you. I wasn't expecting that answer, just knowing that you somehow, maybe because of Dennis or whatever, were willing to trust us, and I wanted to thank you for that. And let folks know that, especially if they watch this documentary, you're going to learn things that a lot of cops who even work in the case, at least peripherally and secondarily, but that they didn't know, the families didn't know, things have been revealed to this community in total they never knew. And here we are.
HBO did something. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
HBO did something that hadn't been done before. Is they took you behind the curtain, so to speak, to actually look at how that case affected not just the survivors, but also the people like us, my partner Huckabee. You know, what happened to us over a period of time, and also they took a hard look at behind the scene with one of the reporters who's been reporting on the case for the better part of 30 years, Erin Moriarty with CBS News. You know, they talked to her extensively. Mm-hmm. That's usually not the hard news, you know, kind of environment like, you know, some of the other shows. So, I mean, it got the HBO treatment, which is different.
So at the end of the day, you're glad you agree to participate in this.
Oh, yeah. I hate when it comes up because, you know, it stirs up, you know, old memories, you know. But at the same time, we think it's important to keep it out there in the public eye and in the hopes that, you know, it'll shake loose that clue that needs to be shook loose and, to, you know, to get this thing finally put to bed and solved.
And how many years has it been?
Over 30.
And it's not officially solved in over 30 years. It changed this community in every particular way that you would imagine and a thousand more that you might not. And we're reminded of that. For those that haven't seen this four-part documentary, it's on HBO, so you can call it up on demand. And I'm going to tell you, if you live around here, historically, it is worth, for the perspective that is still valuable today, it is worth subscribing to HBO for 1 month and then cancel if you want and watch this. In fact, before Dennis and we go a little further here this hour, I'd like to play the HBO trailer. Now, you can't see it, but it is kind of inherent it that might
what
explain
comes
more.
Up first when you think of this case?
It's been 30 years, 7 months, and 5 days, and I still can't believe it.
In 1991, four teenagers were shot and murdered inside a yogurt shop in this strip mall.
I don't know that the city of Austin has ever been the same.
It was just unspeakable.
The place was set on fire.
They were bringing in anybody who was a little bit different.
No, just not always.
I killed somebody.
They're using techniques that can lead to false confession.
We were asking for any tip.
People started calling me. We had so many suspects.
But it was never solved.
It's very frustrating not having answers. It has consumed me.
As time goes on, it takes a toll on you.
I got diagnosed with PTSD.
The older I get, the less I can remember.
And you just have all those regrets
of not protecting them.
I don't think the trauma ever loses its potency.
There's been nothing like it before. There's been nothing like it since.
Thank you for the indulgence here. I really felt like a lot of people didn't even know what the yogurt shop murders were, and that gives you a bit of an idea.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and so in the spring, and actually I think I was sitting in here with you when they did the premiere at South by Southwest. John was kind enough to get the HBO people to hire me to come over there and be, you know, standby in case we had some nut job or something show up.
Yeah.
And I got to see that first episode, obviously, at the premiere with John. And John, look, John and I have been friends for well over 30 years. Again, you know, we said I worked for him for about a year out on patrol. You know, John, having watched all four parts, obviously the second part really delves into the trauma that the first responders dealt with in this thing. And to the point where after I watched it, I texted you because I was like, it upset me. And I'm sitting there watching that segment of you at your most, I think at your most vulnerable. And I think, you know, you told me that they actually asked you if you wanted them to cut that out and you said no. And can you kind of tell us why?
Yeah, well, that second episode, you got to see where I get most of my strength from, and that's from my mother. That whole segment with at my mother's house, mm-hmm. with the reporter asking her pointed questions, and she's slapping them right back at her. And then my kids crawling all over me. That's where I get my strength. Get my strength is from my mother. But yeah, they got me at the end of a very long weekend. Actually, it was 2 years ago, almost to the day. It was right after one of my bigger soccer tournaments that I manage. And all they did was had me read an evaluation report from my psychologist, and I hadn't read it in a number of years. And as I read it, I just sank further, further in depression, essentially what it was. And I made the comment at the end that you could see my legs and my arms shaking, that, yeah, that's why I haven't read this in a number of years, because it was all true. I mean, that was PTSD. And it's like I said, I thought that was something people from the in a war from the battlefield got, like my partner Huckabee, who did a couple of tours in Nam. But it was eye-opening. And as I said, you know, it comes up every time there's an anniversary, it comes up. But that, having to read, you know, what the evaluation of myself was probably the toughest part of any of the interviews I've ever done for that.
Yeah, you know, I alluded, Dennis, a few moments ago to your incredible personality, that gift you have, that God has given you. And I was reminded of that when you're talking about the scenes with your family and all. But it's not hyperbole to say, I can't think of anybody offhand that was ever under more pressure in this community than John Jones. But when you were around John, I don't care who you were, he didn't show that. That had to be really hard.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a cop. Dennis will tell you this, you know, nobody really wants to call the cops, say, to their house or to their business, because it's a prime example of what most people consider failure when you got to call somebody else to take care of your problems. And we're the people that get called. But there's not a lot of attention paid to just what the effect is on the people that you call. But there is a price to be paid. And, you know, that was not long after the yogurt shop. I actually, you know, had to get a divorce. Strangely enough, my ex-wife and I are the best of friends right now. You know, it seems like, you know, we weren't living together. We got along just fine. Yeah, I'll introduce her. Say, hey, this is my ex-wife. And a lot of people cringe. I say, no, it's okay. We get along.
Well, you're and for everybody to know, John's ex-wife was a dispatcher at APD, but she is a super, super person. Hey, John, I'm going to ask you real quick. Can you hang on? We got to take a break real quick. And can you stick around with us and we can come back on the other side of this commercial break and we'll discuss this a little bit more?
What, a break in radio? Yeah, I can handle that.
He's clearly listening to your show, Bob.
Well, if you had actually been here, we'd have guarded the door and you couldn't have gotten out. So thank you for agreeing. He's with us. He's with us for the next few. Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to take on John even now. Stand by. Back with John Jones, Dennis Ferris, 95.9 Austin's Texas Country.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free. to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop, assemble, and bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
8:35. Eric Raines, Bob Cole, alongside Dennis Ferris, special guest on a fun Friday.
Labor Day holiday weekend. Been talking about that documentary you can see on HBO, Significant Austin History, and we're seeing, and it cannot all be described in hours and hours of sitting here having a conversation with a rare conversation, by the way, for John Jones, through the critical times and the longest time, probably, the lead investigator. Also on the force at that time, and was at the shop, the scene of the crime, as early the next morning. Dennis Ferris.
Yeah, we're on day shift, and we got called out to relieve the guys that had been out there all night and set up on the perimeter on this thing. I didn't really investigate any part of it. I never was that in that role, but you know, one of my classmates is actually who found the place on fire, Troy Gay, who retired as an assistant chief from the Austin Police Department. Troy, and I contend to people, I knew Troy before that incident, and I know Troy now, and it's affected him. I know it's affected John. We got quite a few calls from text messages from firefighters. One particular firefighter, Gary Wilkes, texted me, and Gary was out there all night with John that night. John, so, you know, when we're watching this documentary, and I knew all this. I knew the stuff about the guys in Mexico, and you know, the Henry, you know, everybody thought Henry, not Henry Lee Lucas, the other guy, the guy that killed the girl at the car wash,
McDuff.
Everybody thought
Henry
McDuff,
Allen McDuff.
Yeah,
killers always have a middle name, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So, you know, that, and then all of a sudden it got focused on these four, and so, I mean, take us through the highs and lows there, as you think you've got somebody and then you don't, and then you think you got somebody again, then you don't.
Well, the absolute low was the whole Mexico thing. We had gone on a national show to try to find three guys. One of them matched a composite sketch. They were wanted for another crime unrelated down on 6th Street. Was a sexual assault down there that had nothing to do with the yoga shop case. But like I said, the description and the composite given by the victim down on 6th Street was pretty close to the composite given to us on a guy that was seen in the parking lot on our case. So we got him located. We went on America's Most Wanted. They found him down in Mexico, two of the three. And Huck and several members of the task force went down there. And they confessed to the Mexican investigators, unbeknownst to Huck and our people on the ground down there. So you had the Attorney General for the country of Mexico at a news conference when they did the perp walk, saying that these guys had confessed. They caught him, and they were going to try him for the murders down there. It wasn't going to be an extradition case because Mexico still doesn't, I don't think, will extradite to a country with the death penalty. That's, where the death penalty is.
Strangely true, yeah.
Yeah. So, but the problem was we didn't send the real autopsy down there with the guys. All we sent was the sanitized version, which didn't have a cause of death. So Huck and them were under a lot of pressure to send the entire case down there so they could try them for the yoga shop murders in Texas. And it took a lot of, much as I hate this, just saying this word, but it took a lot of political maneuvering by Ronnie Earl and several people in the state, the Texas Attorney General, to not send that entire case down there, especially when Huck got a look at their signed confession, which was, I think, 6 pages legal size, and a lot of the facts in the confession didn't match.
And according to the documentary, not by a little bit, by a lot, I mean,
by a lot.
Mike Huckabee going, these guys, they weren't there.
Yeah, and, you know, they later alleged bags on the head, ginger ale in the nose.
Which blows me away, by the way.
What interest would Mexico have in wanting to prosecute these guys?
Status.
Oh. Like they're the ones that could do it, we couldn't, or something?
They caught them, and they caught them, and they felt like, I guess their status would improve if they caught them, tried them, and convicted them.
And you basically said, you just said, we've located some suspects we want to talk to. And so the news.
The original persons of interest.
Original, when they didn't say that. Persons of interest phrase. So this town lights up. They've been caught. Yeah, it's done. You know, it's finally solved.
And yep, ding dong, the witch is dead.
And then it wasn't.
Yeah, we had stayed unusually quiet, and it took a local news director, actually the late Carol Nealon, over 24. She called the task force office, and for some reason I happened to answer the phone, and I told her, quite frankly, I said, hey, Carol, if you went down there and they decided you did it, they'd get you to confess, too. It's just a different legal system down there. And we had been on the phone all night with the survivors and the parents, telling them if they didn't hear it from us, it didn't happen.
Mm.
So, yeah, when it cratered, we still had a handle on it. But that was the low point. I mean, we were swimming upstream. We were paddling as fast as we could, but we didn't feel like we were getting anywhere, Bob. But we managed to get past that. That was probably the absolute low point, was the whole Mexico thing, because we could see that train leaving the tracks. Still see it to this day. We came close.
If we could fast forward, in fact, to when you kind of boil it down to who it is, and you get the convictions. And then it's overturned because in part the DNA of those guys wasn't there, and somebody else's is, and they've never figured out whose DNA that is. What's your take on that?
Not yet, but as the other side of the coin will point out, I think they've gone for exoneration two times now, maybe. And the court has refused to actually exonerate them. So, you know, mm-hmm. They're on a thin string still out there somewhere. But, yeah, if they took them to trial, they'd have to explain who that DNA belongs to. And it was from a crime scene swab, actually, off one of the bodies. So,
I want to recognize, John, that I have a very unfair question, especially for a friend, but.
Everybody. You, an unfair question?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try to not make it that, but it's something that I know everybody listening wants to know. I'm having it recognized that I know you're not going to, I would guess, tell us who, but do you believe with 100% certainty you know who did this? And it's just a question of time.
I've been asked that question thousands of times, and my answer is still the same. I don't know. I need the evidence.
You need the third leg of the stool.
Tell about
that.
Yeah,
I need the third leg of the stool. That's exactly right, Dennis. That's the best way I can put that.
You said that in the documentary.
I did not land on any one person. We had lots of suspects and lots that sounded good. McDuff sounded good. I mean, you look at the man on paper, and he certainly was capable. If for no other reason, he'd committed a similar crime before up in Fort Worth. But we couldn't tie him to our case. The four guys, the four kids, they were kids when we dealt with them. I didn't think that if they had committed it, that they could have held on to it. You know, without cracking. I, you know, kind of still say that, but I guess it's possible. But as the late Clara Peller used to say, and I'm showing my age now.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef?
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah. John, good Lord, it's so much here.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Here that I think you want folks to know, and I want folks to know, about, because it has a lot to do with where we are today, and not, I don't just mean on this case, but I gather from the documentary and what you're saying right now, you just want the right guy, and you are, am I reading between the lines, or are you saying, with time, because of DNA, we will have the right guy?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that we will. You know, back in the early days, I used to say, where's the gun?
Mm-hmm.
These days, it's where is the DNA? I mean, when they arrested him, it was praise Jesus and all of that. And then Huck and I got to talking about, you know, what the evidence was that they had, and I started to have my doubts. You know, I need the hard evidence. I'm not a confessionist. A confession to me is the bottom of the pyramid, not the top.
Is it fair to say everybody you were working with in homicide wasn't on the same page as you as to, no, we're not going to railroad somebody because we just believe it. We got to have the evidence, and that has caused some issues here?
Well, in the early days, Huck and I were, we had decided we were going to charge the case based on proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what you usually hear associated with a jury trial. You know, before you can find a guilty, you got to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt, as opposed to probable cause. Probable cause to believe that they probably did do it. We had 6 written confessions. I mean, we could have took that confession I talked about from Mexico, took it to any judge and got a warrant of arrest. Because that there was enough in that to for there to be probable cause to believe that they did commit the crime. But we wanted proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and I still do. Huck, as you noticed in the documentary, he says he thinks those guys did it, and you've asked me what thousands of people before you have asked, and probably thousands of people, if I live that long, will ask me after this. I just don't know. I'm waiting for the proof. In this case, I guess the DNA, although the gun would still be nice. But even if they get the DNA, you know, they're going to have to establish probably something else to connect whoever the DNA belongs to the crime, like, you know.
Well, even though you've already already tested, say, all the firefighters, and it wasn't them, but the it may come back with better DNA evidence that it is. So now, you know, they didn't do it. So does that put it? Well, there's so many imponderables.
Not just the firefighters, but all of us and everybody that had any kind of remote connection to that case. I used to tell folks that, yeah, every time there's a new process in DNA, I get fondued. You know, which is how they do that. They take too long, what looks like fondue sticks, and rub around inside your cheek. But there was a little blurb in the documentary where it said over 200 men had been tested, and that's about right. I mean, that's every cop that was out there, every firefighter, the medical examiner, everybody that got anywhere near that crime scene, including the manager, Reese, when we got her out there to try to help us identify him. They fondued everybody. There's a lot of people's DNA on file from that crime scene.
You know, John, I'm kind of going to bring this kind of a close. you're known, I mean, obviously for most people in Austin, you're known as the lead investigator for the Agar Shop, but that really wasn't your first claim to fame. Your first claim to fame was the investigator on the Treaty Oak poisoning.
Yeah, the Arborside. Yes, that was me. That was kind of infamous there. That wasn't as good as Mexico, but yeah, I got that guy that murdered that tree, or tried to murder the tree. It's more of attempted murder, but yeah, he was fun to talk to. He's a member of the Aryan Brotherhood, so he and I got along really well.
I was about John must have loved that.
John is black, by the way. Yeah, so that makes
he
it
is?
Yeah.
I am?
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
No, somebody.
Oh, Dennis, no.
No, you're the one that told me. I didn't know. It's a bad rumor. It's a good rumor. I don't know.
The other thing I tell people is if John tells you something about me, don't necessarily believe it's true, but there is one thing he'll tell you about me that's 100% true. And what is that, John? Do you remember?
Your affinity for Chinese food from Jack in the Box at 2 in the morning?
Yeah, exactly. We had arrested, so let me tell the story real quick. So we had arrested somebody.
Love these stories.
And we all ended up, and it was all, I think half the shift was involved in the arrest. And we go down to report writing, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was hungry. So I go through the Jack in the Box on Runberg Lane in the middle of, you know, in the middle of Fort Apache, right? I mean, that's the worst part of town. And go through the drive through, and I get a chicken teriyaki bowl from Jack in the Box because they were actually pretty good.
I used to eat the heck out of them.
Yeah.
The problem was it was hard to eat those and drive, but I could still do it.
Well, I didn't, drive.
Great.
So I didn't eat it on the way in. So I get in, I walk into report writing, and John's in there and the rest of it. And he goes, "What do you got?" I said, "I got my dinner or breakfast, whatever." It was, we were on night shift. And I took it out and he looked at me and he goes, "You're seriously going to eat that?" And I go, "Yeah, it's good." And from that day, it was kind of like a badge of honor for me because John was like, "Hey, if this dude will eat chicken teriyaki from Jack in the Box at 2 o'clock in the morning, he'll do anything."
Buddy, it was good at 2 in the afternoon. That was good. No wonder we got along so well.
Hey, Bob, I mean, really, Chinese food from Jack in the Box any time of the day?
Well, yeah.
It's like gas station sushi, right?
There you go. Well, you say the same thing about their hamburgers to some degree, too, I guess. John, in closing, something we all knew, but not to that level, and it certainly was accidentally, but came out immediately, alluded to when we started the hour, is the toll it's taken on you. Again, to the naked eye, it appears like you got it all under control, but I know nothing would please you more than to see the thing finally solved. And the documentary points out that you were wearing, when you got called out at middle of the night for this deal from homicide, you're wearing some, you know, hip for about 10 minutes, real flashy rodeo kind of shirt or something. And
that hideous green and white shirt, Bob.
Yeah. And it was something else. And you told the parents when you first met with them, I don't know how the comment came up about the shirt. You said, "Next time you see that shirt, it'll be when we find who does it." You've kept that shirt, and are you still planning on wearing it and seeing them? Because the most surprising thing in the documentary to me was I knew how close you were to that family, but as time went on, their trust in the department, because they wanted information they couldn't get, they wanted it solved. And I believe you actually said in the documentary that you're not even in touch with them anymore. And that's a heartbreaker.
The first time, talking to them after the South by Southwest thing was really good to do.
Oh, you did? Oh, good, good.
Yeah, I talked to Bob and Karen.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob and Pam, sorry. But I will tell you this, my daughter, who's 38 now, the one that was crawling around on me.
In the documentary.
Yeah, she's 37 now. She has instructions that what that shirt means. Well, she knows what it means, but she has instructions to carry on my wishes in that if it's ever solved and I'm not around, you know, to take that shirt and, you know, go find he'll find the parents, or, you know, maybe it's their kids, like Sonora, and he'll knock on the door. You know, it's kind of a, sorry.
No, don't hey, look, dude, don't apologize. That this what you're hearing, and I need folks to understand this, is the human side of policing that you don't necessarily see. And when you hear people, and I'm going to say this, MF and the cops for this and MF and the cops from that, you need to listen to John's voice right now and realize how much solving this means to him, means to his family.
See, I'm not even thinking, right, Dennis, about, well, I hope it happens before you die. It will happen before you die. But this is the way you're even thinking of it, that it means it's meant that much in your life. And what a better way to illustrate not only what cops are about, but what a really special man in John Jones is, man. And John, gosh, thank you. Maybe not the ideal way for you to kick off your Labor Day holiday weekend, hang up and go have fun now, but you do have a lot to celebrate in all the support that you probably don't see all the time or every day like most police officers, like most cops.
But day to day, Bob. That's all of us are, day to day.
And the only people we can rely on is our own, is ourselves, and have each other's backs and know that anytime one of us needs something, they can call one of the rest of us and we'll come running. And like I said, that's the way I felt after I watched that second episode. I felt like I needed to reach out. I mean, of course, John and I, when he comes to town, we try to get together. But, you know, after I watch, I mean, I literally just finished watching that second episode and I went, I need to get a hold of John.
When he comes to town, where do you live? Now,
or Denver.
You're out in Denver? So you're in town. You would have been in town. Oh, I didn't know that.
Here for a soccer tournament, aren't you?
Yeah, my annual Labor Day soccer tournament for the Lone Star Club.
John's a big soccer referee.
Oh.
Well, I've lost a little weight, thanks, Dennis.
John
hey,
Jones.
Bob?
Yes, sir. Sergeant
hey,
John Jones. Yes, sir.
Don't forget, I'll be looking for a shout-out.
September 13th.
I'll remind him.
I found out about 1 minute before we went on the air when we connected with him on the phone that John played in the Longhorn Band, and several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, joined the alumni band. And and once again, I'll get to see him. You'll come back for that, for the big alumni band performance this year. I know the date. I don't remember. I think it's in September, though, isn't it?
It's the 13th.
September 13th, yeah.
That's I'll right. remind
yeah,
you.
It's going to El Paso, I think. Or,
Utah.
What is it?
Utah,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be, by the way, tied in that weekend with the dedication of a statue. Do you know about that?
To Mr. D, my conductor when I was in the band. He's the one who accepted me into the band, into that family. Mr. Vincent R. Danino. Mr. D, we called him.
The best friend of Coach Darryl K. Royal. And you don't see many associations where there's true love and working together and friendship as well between a head coach of a football team and the head of the marching band. And what history that is, and well-deserved. John, and what history you represent. All I can say is thank you, man. And you know, love you. Absolutely love you. Take care.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Be safe out there. Don't believe too much Dennis tells you.
Got installed that filter years ago. It's clogging up again. Thank you. John
thanks,
Jones,
JJ.
A legend from Austin and the Austin Police Department. It's Dennis, thank you for
making absolutely.
That happen. Making that happen.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to hear that. I've seen the documentary.
Other than the documentary, I see why he won't go do these things.
It's tough on him. It's tough on him. It's tough on me. It's tough on me being his friend to listen to him, right? It was tough on me to see it in the documentary at the same time. You know, it stirred up all kinds of stuff with me, too. So, and I'm sure probably most cops that were cops in Austin during that particular time, it stirred up a lot of, you know, it stirred up a lot of emotions. And you know, I'm going to be standing there at the press conference when they solve this thing. I'm going to make it my point to be standing there when they held that press conference.
If not,
I'll have my son do it.
Your son will.
Yep.
Who's followed your footsteps and is, what's he in now at APD?
He's a SWAT sniper.
SWAT sniper at APD. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
we'll just leave it at that.
Dennis, they used to call him Don Knotts. He couldn't shoot anything. But his son is
gave him one
expert.
Bullet.
Hey, I tell you what, I'll give Adam one bullet.
Barney five.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Ferris and, of course, John Jones. Thank you. All right, coming on 9 o'clock. This is 95.9 Austin's Texas Country. Thank you.